This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local News Talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much for the intro here on a Friday, and it is Christmas Eve Friday. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Christmas Eve, last-minute shopping, big shopping day. Hopefully lots of people buy lots of things, generate a lot of sales tax so we can balance our budget.
Do you go gift shopping?
Yesterday I bought something at J&R across the street from, all the way across the street. This was a Hanukkah gift though, a little bit belated, but, did it because the J&R people are nice and they're always helpful. I have gifts for everybody. Can't tell you what they are because all of my family listens to you sure. In the morning. I always have dinner with my kids and Christmas Eve. We've been doing it forever. You could ask why somebody named Bloomberg goes to listen to Christmas carols, because it's New York.
And you also don't you attend, or I know you have attended, I don't know if you will tonight, but Midnight Mass?
Every year. Thank you very much. I would not miss it. Actually,
it's really spectacular.
It is spectacular, and you know, I see a lot of friends there, so the socializing for the half an hour before the Mass starts is always fun. Get caught up. The Archbishop has become an official New Yorker. I haven't designated that yet, but I, at one point, will probably have a big ceremony.
I think that's an excellent idea, because he's a piece
Timothy Michael Dolan, you'd never think he's an Irishman.
Never.
But he's because his middle name, that's why I have to be nice to him. And I assume Cardinal Egan will be there. So it'll be nice. Lots of symbolism and that sort of thing, and a religious purpose. But for non-Catholics, it's just a symbol, I think, of... you say peace on earth, but that's not such a bad objective for all of us.
Absolutely. And, I notice, and maybe it is just personal psychology, but there seems that on Christmas Eves and other religious holidays like it, whatever the religion might be, the city takes on sort of a different kind of glow, if you will. I mean, there's a different, it's a little brighter.
You know, I still come back to, I think, the key difference between New York and other cities is not its diversity, because while we are very diverse, there are other diverse cities. It's that we live as a mixture, not a mosaic. And in other places, there's an area where one ethnic group or one economic group or one religious group lives. And if they go out of that area, people aren't as comfortable. They're not as comfortable where they're going, and people that don't receive them as well. In New York, we live all together. So people don't feel threatened by somebody that's different. It's the real key to New York's success. And you can, in Queens, in one block, you'll see signs in Russian and Korean and Arabic and Spanish and English and whatever. I phrase it, we all go down the same steps of the subway side by side, or the same kiosk for our newspaper, or the same Starbucks for coffee, or the same corner they get a cab. And so people that are different aren't threatening, because we're with them all the time. And that just sets a different tone. And I think New Yorkers, maybe, I don't know, that what I've just said, facts, you can do the demographics and see how we live. What I think comes out of it, though, is something that I just believe, and I think you see it, and that is an appreciation that if we want our freedoms, we've got to make sure the other guy has his or her freedoms. And it's what New York is all about. Where else could you get a Christmas tree lighting with a guy named Zucker, Spire, and Bloomberg? Three guys. If you listen carefully, the ethnicity.
I wonder how many people actually picked up on that.
My friends thought it was very funny.
Certain irony involved.
Yeah, but it's because a Christmas tree is a symbol of getting together and families and whatever. And, you know, in the same ways... You know, if somebody said to me, Happy Hanukkah, and it was obviously, let's say, Timothy Michael Dolan, Archbishop, I would say Happy Hanukkah. And if he said Merry Christmas, I would say Merry Christmas. He'd say Merry Christmas, because it transcends what you are. Now, I think a lot of people would say we should not forget the religious purpose of whether it's Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Christmas or whatever. And I think that is also true. But you don't have to believe in any one religion to respect what that religion's values are or what the messages, because the message of all of these religions is pretty much the same. They all came out of the same part of the world around the same time.
Well, I've always mentioned that, and I've always talked about it, that of all of those that you've just mentioned, but add into it Buddhism and Hinduism and all of the rest of them, they really are very similar. They all walk the same path, and the names might be different for holidays and individuals that are talked about, but the spirit of all of them is the same.
And the way we celebrate. I'll never forget the first time I was in Tokyo. It was around Christmas time. And they're very, I don't think they're that many, at least they weren't then, Christians in Tokyo. But you have never seen as many Christmas, Santa, sleigh bells, all of that. Because to them, it's not a religious thing. It's a getting together, maybe pulling families together. I'd say my favorite holiday of all is Thanksgiving. Because on Thanksgiving, you tend to bring the families together, whereas at other times, other holidays, you may very well go elsewhere to vacation or with friends or whatever. And not everybody. I got a haircut this morning. My barber's working. I'm working today. You're working today.
I'm working today.
But very few. The traffic is non-existent on the streets. And I have a lot of friends who are, you know, away for a couple of days or, you know, for visit some family.
So you're working hard. Good. We're going to get to work here. Let me take a break, our first one, and then we'll come right back and get down into some of the stories that are making headlines and news with you and the city. John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg dancing around the Christmas tree here on Christmas Eve morning.
Is that what we've been doing?
Yeah, well,
figuratively.
Figuratively speaking, yes. all right, where are we going to start here? Let's start with City Time. That unfortunate situation continues to unfold. And Joel Bondi, the man in charge of the whole thing, resigned yesterday?
He resigned. And vast Deputy Mayor Goldsmith, he's in the middle of undertaking a broad effort to review subcontracting and consultant billing and markups and record-keeping practices in all of our large information technology projects. We just want to see if there's, you know, why certain things were missed and how you can do it better, and make sure we install any additional measures or safety nets that are needed to prevent waste and fraud. This is a project that we have to get done. This will save the city an enormous amount of money, and there's 90,000 city workers who get paid from City Time already. And it'll grow to about 175,000 is what it's planned for. There are other agencies that, for a variety of reasons, initially will not be on it. But those agencies that use it, by and large, are very happy. They say it saves an enormous amount of time and labor. In terms of development, we just want to ensure that everyone uses the best practices and that agencies are sharing information about their experiences so they can learn from each other. And we're going to work across all agencies because all agencies have information technology needs. And Goldsmith's bringing in lots of other city officials. Everyone knows this review is serious, and I want some answers and how you can tighten it up.
Do your people tell you whether or not you'll get some of the money back, if not all of it?
Rose Gilhern thought that we would get virtually all of it back, most of it back. But that doesn't make it any better. The real damage is it slows you down from developing a system that we really need. And maybe makes it more difficult to do other systems that the city needs. The consequences of those things are much greater than the money, but we should get most of this money back.
After the investigation, would you expect different oversight procedures? Or?
Yeah, I think clearly things will be different. Keep in mind, one hand you're trying to keep this project going. It's very important. If you stopped it today, 90,000 people wouldn't get a paycheck. And the other agencies that are scheduled... Right. The other agencies scheduled to go on really do need this done. At the same time, there's an investigation. You got to be careful not to compromise the investigation and jeopardize any prosecutions.
There will be prosecutions, obviously.
I can't speak for the agencies, but I assume so. It's fair ways to say it. We just got to keep plugging along and not sit there and beat ourselves over the head, but stop and say, how can you do it better? And you know, that's what you got to do.
9/11
And
Bill.
Keep in mind, incidentally, administration's record on rooting out corruption, I think, is probably the best anybody's ever had, or certainly close, I think so.
Yeah, the speed bump like this one, you know, unfortunate. Yeah,
these things happen, and you just got to put your head down and say, you know, I wish it didn't happen, but what do we do next?
I think New Yorkers would very much hope that we get most of the money back, considering all of the other issues, financial, that we have swirling around us. So
there's no argument about that.
All right, 9/11 bill got passed.
9/11 bill got passed. A lot of different people helped. I think it's fair to say Kirsten Gillibrand deserves the most credit. She and Chuck Schumer in the Senate. Chuck, you know, it was the guy that rounded up all the votes. Kirsten was the driving force. She and I talked once, twice, every single week. She was just tireless and just worked as hard as she could, deserves a lot of credit. Over on the House side, Republican Peter King, Democrat Carolyn Maloney and Jerry Nadler, and a whole bunch of other people, you know, Anthony Weiner and all these people sort of helped to get it along. We pulled out all stops. Rudy Giuliani made some calls when I asked him and others asked him. George Pataki did. I went down and testified. It was an all hands on deck kind of operation. It wasn't everything you would like.
Yeah, I mean, your reaction to the sort of a half a loaf, if you will.
A lot better than no loaf. And I don't know that it's half a loaf, but it went a long ways towards getting what we did. Somebody said, oh, this is a New York problem. And then somebody else, I thought very smartly, said, that's like saying Pearl Harbor was a Hawaiian problem. This was an attack against America, maybe even against freedom-loving people around the world. And, you know, it was funny because when I talked about everybody weighing in, Jon Stewart, comedian, had as much to do with getting this done as anybody else. You know, the power of...
You mean just the negative talk about it not getting
done? Yeah, I mean, he ginned things up and said, wait a second, come on, this is America. You got to come to... We send soldiers over, we protect them. These were people we asked to go in. And Jon Stewart, not an elected official, an entertainer, but he's an entertainer with a voice. And he's always had an interest in policy and in making America better. And I think we shouldn't understate the rest of us at elected officials. I don't know why everybody's happy.
Well, I
about
don't
it.
Think anybody does underestimate the media and the people that are in it.
I mean, so Stewart was there, but there were lots of other people.
I mean,
Jay
Leno makes a joke about the president or you or me or whomever it might be, it has an effect one way or the other.
Absolutely. They would not make jokes about you or me, would they?
I don't know. Certainly not me. They might about you. I don't know. What was your reaction to the census numbers and the fact that not so much that there are 308 million people in America, but the fact that New York lost...
I don't think anybody should be surprised. The big high tax states all lost seats, and the low tax states all, and that's maybe overstating it a little bit, but generally that's what happened. People are moving from the high tax states, the low tax states, and it's certainly I don't know that we needed a wake-up call because we certainly should have known, but it's a reminder that if people can move from one state to another, businesses can move from one country to another, and the difference is nobody's going to give up their American citizenship, or virtually nobody, but businesses can do business all around the world, and they get taxed locally, so they put their plants wherever they want. You see Ireland fighting so hard. Ireland's getting bailed out by the EU, and the one thing they wouldn't cave in on is their low business tax rates. They think a third of their jobs are there because the companies want low taxes. Now, somebody will say, oh, this is an outrage that they want low taxes. You know, the judge said you have a perfect right to legally reduce your tax bill. Why would they not have a right to go? Ireland's a country with English speaking, which is useful in international trade, a well-educated population, work ethic. And at one point, when Ireland was in the doldrums, maybe 20 years ago, 25 years ago, I know my company, you could hear Gaelic spoken in the halls. There were so many people from Ireland, young people, got an education, couldn't get a job there, came to America, the land of opportunity, created businesses, worked hard. And then as the Irish economy got better, a lot of them went back. Now the Irish economy is in big trouble again. But they understand that low taxes are one of the real things. It's also quality of life. You got to keep your crime down. You got to improve your public schools. You got to have all these cultural... New York's economy is built around, in many senses, around its cultural institutions. That's what creates the intellectual property argument that the place where the best and the brightest want to be, and everything comes out of that. How do you do that at the same time keeping your taxes low? Well, as somebody would say, you know, hey, Bloomberg, you wanted the job, you do it. Or legislator so-and-so, you wanted the job, you do it. That is our the conundrum, but it's also, and I think we can get through that. New York City is, you know, we're still going to have enormous problems in the budget. We've got a deficit. I know, thinking of how to handle that one. It's a question of what the state does to us. The state of New York, the state of Illinois, the state of California, some other states, they've been spending money they don't have. State of New Jersey, big article in the paper today about their pension fund. The pension fund, it's enormous, the deficits they have.
Well, they've stolen the money, and they haven't funded it for years.
They haven't funded it. The three reasons why
they've moved up monies to other places.
There's three reasons why pension funds are in trouble. One is market performance. It was tough to, everybody assumes. New Jersey, I think, has an 8.25% assumption that they will make. New York has an 8%. There's one professor I read, she estimated 3.75 was a reasonable estimate. If you go back and look, what do money managers make over long periods of time, something like that. If that's the case, New Jersey's pension deficit goes from $60 billion to $170-odd billion. New York City's had the same problems with its investment performance. It's been okay, not great, not terrible, not the worst.
But again, it's the assumptions that have kind of...
The assumptions simply say, if a higher assumption on return, you have to put less money in. That just makes you feel good. It has nothing to do with what the actual return is down the road. If you haven't made the money, you got to make it up. If you have made the money, you don't have to make it up. Now, sometimes you can take it out, and you can argue whether that's good or bad policy. Taking it out and spending it in good times doesn't give you cushion in bad times. But it's lack of investment performance or poor investment performance. It is making up the assumption if it changes. And it is giving benefits that we can't afford. New Jersey, according to this article today, and this is what Governor Christie's fighting, they didn't fund their pension fund, and he didn't fund it this year, about $3 billion that they should have put in and didn't. And at the same time, the legislator voted bigger benefits. Now, I understand why the people who get the benefits want them. There's nothing wrong with them asking for it. I've never blamed the unions for asking for too much. That's their job. It's the government that gives them things we can't afford. But, you know, pensions costs are going to... New York City's pension costs, when I came in office, were $1.5 billion a year. This year it's $7-something, and next year it's going to be $8-something. $8 billion a year.
And there's really no easy way to fix it.
Well, in New York...
You've got to go back and create new...
In New York, the law says even if the state legislature gives benefits, a city pays for them. But if the state gives them, even they can't take them away. Now, I don't know what would happen if you... I'm told if the city went bankrupt, it would probably even survive. States can't go bankrupt, so their pension funds for sure would survive. Ours probably would survive, and the people would still get the benefits. It's really hard to see how you cut back. You can cut back for the future, and that's what I've been arguing now for X number of years. Honor the commitments we have to the current employees. Tell the new employees who you haven't yet hired, if you want the job, it comes with fewer benefits.
All right.
Period. We don't have to hire.
Is this a silly question?
Not if it comes from you.
Why couldn't the legislature, if it wanted to, state legislature, if it wanted to, change the law that says you can't change the pensions?
I think it's in the state constitution.
Is it in the constitution?
And it would require something like that, yes. I thought what you're going to ask is why can't they just put in what we would call a fifth tier?
Well, I thought that's kind of where they're going.
Thinking-wise. Generally, they can, and they've been unwilling to. Now, you could argue it's because of pressure from the unions. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But, you know, I still come back to nothing wrong with the unions pressuring. The mistake is those who listen.
Well, the governor made a move yesterday, and I want to get your reaction to it on that prevailing wage and some other things. We'll talk about it as we continue. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, John Gambling, 8:31. Here's Joe.
Snow is glistening, a beautiful shine. We're happy tonight.
Well, Well, I'm not sure that the mayor of New York likes winter wonderlands, because that's nothing but dollars and cents out the window.
$1 million an inch is the old rule, so. Although if it's less than 2 inches, we don't plow, because the plows can't get into it, and that's over a long period of time. We have been very lucky over the last half a dozen years of very little snow. And when we've had snow, we've been lucky. It's been on a weekend when it's easy for the plows to get through because you don't have all the traffic. And the sanitation department's done a great job. But I will say that nature has cooperated as well, which is always nice. I was seeing the paper. It's on the paper today. Syracuse has already had 6 feet of snow.
Just amazing. And out west in the Colorados and the mountains, it's even
I was up
that.
In Ithaca 2 days ago to visit a juvenile jail. And everything was snow-covered. Not a lot. Not the roads, but everything else.
Tell me about that. What'd you get involved with that for?
The city, by state law, has to send juveniles who judges decide to incarcerate up to state juvenile prisons. The state has put them one in the Bronx, but most of them are very far away. It's a five-hour drive to Ithaca, for example, which means families can't really, in a practical sense, visit their kids. And if you're ever going to get these kids back on the straight and narrow, and some you will, some you won't, but families are a big part of trying to get them back on the straight and narrow. It just makes it very difficult. It's also true, these are job creation things.
The jail
that I visited, they said there were 46 kids that were incarcerated there. Ages 12 through 20, average is about 17, 16, and they're there for an average of 7 months. Some much longer, some much less. There are 150 people that work there.
For 46
kids? Well, part
of
it is the law. The law says you have to have psychiatric help. The law says you have to have teachers for education. The law says you got to have dietitians and that sort of thing. Every one of these laws that legislators pass, they pass them. Nobody stops to think they all cost. You want another level of inspection? Fine. But somebody's got to pay for it, and nobody ever focuses on that. In this case, it was a prison that the Justice Department made a fuss about in terms of how they took care of the kids. I gather they've cleaned up their act. I saw a lot of the staff getting training. The rooms that were full of staff getting training. It's a beautiful facility. The state put a lot of money into it. Excuse me. People that were running it, and the people that work there, you got a real sense that they cared and were trying to do the right thing and help these kids. I talked to a couple of teachers and guards, and I walked away thinking, you know, they really care about their jobs and they're really trying to do what's right. But nevertheless, we cannot afford, we shouldn't have prisons that far away from where the kids come from, and we shouldn't have, we can't afford a staff.
So
like
is the
that.
City going to do something?
Well, it's up to the state. incoming Governor Cuomo toured one of these and said he was going to try to do something. Keep in mind, it's up to the legislature. So, you know, I will certainly work with the governor to do something about this, but I don't know how much progress you can make, because the upstate representatives in the legislature want to keep these prisons or jails going upstate. That's, you know, one of the main sources of for jobs. But from our point of view, if you ever want to get the kids back on the straight and narrow, having them closer is better. And what we've said is, let us do it. Let the city change the state law. Let the city worry about it. Give us the same money. Right now, we spend something like, I forget the number, but it's like $250,000 a year per kid.
$250,000.
You can send six or seven kids to Harvard for that price. Why? Because we get charged based on what their expenses are divided by the number of kids, not amount per kid. So if you have 150 people taking care of 50 kids, you know, divide by
three.
And the
staff is not flexible.
Well, it does not seem to be flexible. So, you know, the cost is just astronomical. We split it with the state. We think that a lot of these kids, if they were local, you could do things like home detention and other things. It turns out you can predict, not with 100% certainty, but pretty good, whether or not, which kids really need incarceration and which kids don't. And you say, well, you know, I don't want anybody that committed a crime on the streets. The bottom line is, if you send the kid to some of these places, all they're going to do is learn to do worse things. So that's not an answer. I know it sounds good. You feel I'm tough. But no, that's not the right answer. I'm not suggesting for a second there aren't a bunch of kids that deserve to be incarcerated and for society's sake should be to protect us. But the question is, you can only afford a certain amount. And the reality is, you know, when I say I want everything, well, you can't have everything, Mike. And so, anyways, we would like to get control of it, bring it back into the city. We think we could do it a lot better and a lot cheaper. And hopefully the governor will focus on this, and we'll certainly be there with him.
All right, the governor, David Patterson, only a few more days left. You know, this week, one of the couple of things that he has done, signed a bill that makes bankruptcy a little less onerous for those that owe, maybe more onerous for those that are owed. And the other is the prevailing wage.
Well, the bankruptcy thing, the city's interest is in seizing cars where there are outstanding parking fines and people that are parking illegally. The governor recognized the problem. The Senate did change the law, but the one that was passed didn't have the change in it.
The assembly says they'll come back.
Well, the assembly didn't. Right. The assembly said they'll come back and do it after the first of the year, and that would get us out of having a real interest in that bill. It has some good parts and bad parts. The prevailing wage, you know, I don't know why people are going from some states to another. You cannot stop the tide from coming in.
And the governor did veto this, by the way.
This one he vetoed. He was, I thought, correct. We all have an interest in having the people that live here have good jobs that pay well and have benefits. Having said that, the ways you get it is not by passing a law making you do it, making the employer do it, because the employer will just leave. Or go out of business. The ways you do it is by training and bringing the kind of jobs here that justify higher wage costs in return for better skills. And you know, you saw Kingsbridge Armory is as good an example because of one or two people. It's an outrage. I mean, forget about it. I don't want to stir things up and tell them who they are. Everybody knows who they are. That one guy said, I don't care, no job's better than a bad job or a low-paying job. Well, you know, people need entry-level jobs as well. This will, the Kingsbridge Armory, it's been empty for 20 years or something like that. We finally found somebody who was going to develop something. People in that area would have had a new ways to go shopping and buy a bigger selection of stuff at lower prices, a lot of creation of new jobs, entry-level jobs, where you could then work your ways up. All gone because a couple of people said, I don't care. I'm just going to stick with this. And no job's better than a low-paying job. And I don't know. Then one of them, the borough president, said, oh, I'll have a study committee and we'll find other things. Yeah, good luck. Here we are a few years later. You know, maybe your kids will see something, but it's going to be a long time. Because now, who would go in there knowing exactly what the political pressures would be? You can't. Nobody wants to have a business where the state's telling them, or the state in this case, city, is telling them how much they have to pay. We have minimum wage, but it's across the country. And even that, if it's too big, people will move business overseas. But generally, why does somebody not move their business overseas? If low price is the solution, is their business model, they do move them overseas. They used to move them to Eastern China. Eastern China's hollowing out. They're moving to Western China. Now they're out of Western China going to Bangladesh and Indonesia, Sri Lanka. There's always somebody who will do it cheaper. The United States has to focus on jobs where it's not low price, but it's hard work and skill sets and
quality,
innovation and quality and the industries that people are here because they have to be where other people in the same industry are. That's what we're trying to create in biotech, for example, in New York City. Or IT, information technology. We're becoming one of the IT centers of the country and of the world because if you want to have a business and be able to hire people, you want to go where those people are. Why are those people here? Because other people are here. And this business of trying to dictate benefits and wages just doesn't work. If the workers want to unionize, I don't have a problem with that. Let the union negotiate with the employer. They can come to an agreement or not come to an agreement. That's what the free market and freedom is all about. But government shouldn't be in the business. And if you do, for some good reasons, like a minimum wage across the country, at least make it the same across the country so you don't pit one city versus another, one state versus another. And the city like New York, you know, we're creating a lot of jobs. We're doing better than the rest of the country. You want to end that overnight, There's some bills. I could write a bill for you the city council could pass that would end that overnight.
There are reports in the paper today. Some people are using words that this has to do with the mosque at Ground Zero, that its existence was rigged from City Hall. Your reaction?
The city just, they asked for help. When the Pope came to town, the Catholic New York Archdiocese asked for help. We did the same thing. We wrote letters for them and figured out who they should go to, because they wanted to tell community boards and other churches and religious mosques and temples and synagogues that there might be traffic and whatever. We do it when you want to create a sukkah in Bryan Park. We helped them. And that's the city's job, is to, if you want to, we don't pick favorites. And if you want to start a business, we're working very hard to reduce the bureaucracy, and we'll help you. We've cut the time to open a restaurant from something like 6 months down dramatically. We're going to make it even lower. Small businesses of every kind. If you want to start a religious place of worship, if you want to start a nonprofit, that's our job, is to help you, and we will do what we can. But when we say we don't get involved, we don't get involved in picking one versus another. But our responsibility is anybody that walks in the door that needs help, our job is to help.
What can you tell us about the idea that was floated earlier in the week about King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia and St. Vincent's Hospital and the mosque at Ground Zero? Do you know anything about that?
I read in the paper the Rudens were trying to develop the St. Vincent's property were as surprised as anybody. I have absolutely no idea. I've never talked to anybody about it. If a religious organization wants to set up and move, we'll provide the same services we provide to everybody else. Is there a demand for a mosque in that place? I don't know. And keep in mind, I think these guys were trying to build a cultural center, or how they'd raise the money, I don't know. But there are mosques downtown. There are mosques all over. There are temples all over, synagogues all over.
I see the imam has announced that he's going to go on a tour here.
George W. Bush hired this guy to go around the country.
I understand. Around the world.
I must have met him once or twice, and I remember meeting his wife one time. If Bush thought the guy was okay, probably not too liberal. I mean, George W. was pretty conservative.
Pretty conservative. I think you can say that for sure. Mr. Mayor, we have a full bank of phones here. Why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll get to your questions this morning. 6 minutes before 9 o'clock. Let's go to the telephones. Mr. Mayor, I think you got your headphones there. We're going to start with number 5 here, and that is Stephen. Stephen, you got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a lot of respect for the mayor and also for Mr. Ed Koch, but don't you think bridges and streets should be named after fallen veterans or veterans who've lost limbs because they mean so much?
Stephen, I couldn't agree more, and we do that. This week, we named 65 streets. A big chunk of them were for veterans or cops or firefighters who lost their lives protecting the rest of us. Keep in mind, if you take a look at a lot of the parks in New York City, you wonder where the names came from. It's not all, but an awful lot of them are World War I veterans who went off to war and didn't come back. Man, we killed almost a whole generation of males, and World War I was a disaster. And as a Civil War was much worse, but... So we do name a lot of them, and we name some for people that do other things to help us. Keep in mind, Ed Koch was a decorated World War II sergeant. And so he certainly
Sergeant Koch.
Absolutely. He served his country then. He served his country as a city council, but certainly a congressman before. And he's made a difference. So, Stephen, I think we should honor, and we do.
All right, Stephen, thank you. Let us go to Kevin. Kevin, it's your turn with the mayor. Go.
Thank you. Hey, Mayor Bloomberg, thank you very much. You're doing a great job. I'm actually from Rockaway, and we love you when you come down to the parade, the Rockaway Irish Parade.
I love that parade. It is cold and it is long, but then I go to two different houses to have corned beef and cabbage and some Irish coffee, so I look forward to that.
I'm sure it's well worth it. I was kind of a broad question, but I was sitting down with a friend of mine the other day, and we were just talking about how the city is in such a deficit, and there's only people are shorting, they're cutting fire department houses and everything, and there's no money around, apparently.
What's the question?
The question is basically, we're just talking about just alone the MTA, how, say 2 or 3 million, 4 million people riding the trains, buses every day, say that even at $2 a clip, it's like $8-10 million right there. And all this money generated from businesses, tourists and stuff, and we just wonder, still, in our minds, we figure, why is it Why is there a deficit?
Plain and simple. We spend more money than we take in. I mean, no, the money doesn't go to, you know, have a hunting lodge for the people that work for one of these agencies. The people that work for the agencies get salaries and pensions and that sort of thing. Most of what the monies the city takes in, and the state too, goes for, well, in the case of the city, most of the money goes for salaries. Five agencies take 80% of the salaries, education, Department of Education, and then the four uniformed services, police, fire, corrections, sanitation. And 80% of those agencies' budgets are salaries and benefits. You say, why do we not have enough? Well, because we don't charge enough. We don't want to. If you were to design the perfect mass transit system, you'd have it free to get people to go on it. The trouble is somebody's got to pay for it. So we have the state and the city subsidizing, and then we also charge the strap hanger. And we just don't do enough for what we want. We should make big investments. You can borrow the money because the benefit is there for a long time. And in labor-saving things, we tried to do that with congestion pricing, and the money was all going to go to make investments in the MTA to make the rides more attractive, more frequent, safer, whatever. And the thought was more people would start using it because it costs more to drive your car, so it's a better economic alternative, but also the more pleasurable and efficient the ride is, the more people use mass transit, that would have gotten more fares coming in, and you could have reduced your labor costs because a lot of the stuff, the technology means you need fewer people. The state legislature said, no, we got a better idea, and here we are 3 or 4 years later, still waiting for it. The MTA has no real capital budget, and so what you see is going to get worse in the state unless you can find a ways, you know, something like city time. For all the problems with it, it will save us money once it gets going. And you just have to keep doing those things. But the basic answer is, no, it may not seem like we do, but we spend an enormous amount of money. 60% of the federal budget is benefits or entitlements and debt service. And out of the one, or something like two-thirds, out of the third that's left, half of that is the military. And everything else is in the balance. And so when people talk about cutting the federal deficit, I don't know what they're talking about. Nobody's willing to cut the things where most of the money goes. And unless you do that, you'll never solve that problem.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the good question there. Let's go to line number four, and that is Mario. Mario, real fast on the question, if you would, please.
Merry Christmas to both of you. Mayor Bloomberg, your big, big problem is your pensions. Within 2 years, you're going to have to make up $29 billion of the money that the state pension lost in the last 3 years through stock investments because it's written into the state.
Yep, you're right.
You have to address that.
We are trying to address it, but as I said before when John and I were talking, Mario, it's up to the state legislature. The city can't do it. These are state things. The state mandates what we have to do. They mandate the assumption on returns. They give most of the benefits, some from the city, but mostly from the state, and then we have to pay for it. And our pension costs have gone from $1.5 billion to next year $8.5 billion. In the term I've been in office.
I'm afraid we're
Merry
out of time,
Christmas, everybody.
Mr. Mayor, yes. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas, no matter what your religion is or holiday, or we talked about that.
Yep.
You know,
and,
good time of the year.
You and I will get
no drinking and driving, please. Have a good time.
All right, we'll see you on the last day of this year.
Cannot wait.
Next Friday. That's going to do it, everybody. Thank you very much, and let me repeat what the mayor just said. A very Merry Christmas from everybody here on the...